A62. Number 9A.
We take the next assignment on the study guide B3, where we go just one step further and we have each idea reflecting all the synonyms. The assignment is the following, that if we have an idea that is characterizing a specific synonymous term that Mrs. Eddy would use and we will use, this idea also in combination with other synonymous terms, but we cannot freely interchange the synonymous term. Now here we come to that great question, are the synonymous term freely interchangeable? See, a terrific big question which says, yes, they are in a certain way. No, they are not always. So we have an answer which says yes and no, but it is very definite when it is yes, and it's very definite when it is no. Can you see the big point? Which is not understood in the Christian Science movement. On one side, we have God can be defined through the seven synonymous term. Each one of the seven synonymous term stands for God. Therefore, the moment it stands for God, it is freely interchangeable. Therefore, if I have only a sentence which says, what is God? My answer can be, God is mind. The other one can say, God is spirit. The third one can say, God is soul. Fourth one can say, God is principle. And nobody could say, the one is right and the other one is wrong. All the seven answers are right, because there the synonymous term refer to God. The moment we are using the seven synonymous terms not in order to define God, but the moment we use them in order to offset a false concept. Therefore, the moment we refer the synonymous term not to God, but to offset the false concept, at that moment they are no more freely interchangeable. Is that clear?
Yes.
See? So, can you see the great point about the synonymy principle, that they always somehow are able to answer questions which seem to be the very opposites of each other. One side we say they are freely interchangeable, and one side we say they are not freely interchangeable. And that does not contradict itself as long as we know when. Therefore, we have seen when last year we went through the text and were investigating, for instance, I think we investigated power, the idea of power, and we would find out that power is intrinsically a characteristic of mind and not of the other synonymous terms. Because she would define mind as all power, as the power of all. But we could also see that Mrs. Eddy would use that term power with, in relation with spirit, with soul, with life. thinking with truth and with love. Therefore, textually, Mrs. Eddy speaks of the power of spirit, the power of life, the power of truth, the power of love. I think these are the ones she uses in the textbook. And therefore, from a literal point of view, when one does not understand the synonymy principle, the reader can say, Mrs. Eddy uses the synonymous terms interchangeably. She does not have a definite concept of what each synonymous term means, because you cannot say that mind is power, because she speaks about the power of spirit, and the power of life, and the power of truth, and the power of love, and it's black and white, and you can't deny that. But that's only a literal concept and not a spiritual concept. Because spiritually we can see that power is only mind, but then we must ask ourselves, but why does Mrs. Eddy use power in relation with other synonymous terms? And we have seen last year definitely that practically in every case, so up to around about, my guess was 95% of the case, and that's for the beginning good enough, that one can use naturally every idea, that's assignment 3, every idea with every synonymous term, but only in a specific way. You remember what we meant, what that specific way is. When are we using a combination? Do you remember what we said was the great rule when a combination can be used?
To offset a specific belief.
To offset a specific belief. Therefore, the moment the synonymous term refers to offsetting a belief and does not refer to defining God. See, this is a different purpose. Then we can naturally combine and must very definitely combine. We are then not free to choose between the power of spirit and the power of life and the power of truth and the power of love. Which one do we have to use? If I speak about, say, the power of life, when do I have to use that? When dealing with a counterfeit of life. Then I have to use, naturally, life as that which offsets the belief. Therefore, the moment I have a belief that death has power, that decay has power, at that very moment I have to offset death, I have to offset decay, I have to offset it through it, the fact, the divine fact about death, which is life. So I introduce a synonymous term to offset exactly the counterfeit belief. Then, naturally, I can speak about the power of life, the law of life, the action of life. That's very clear. And in this way we get a very, very exact language, and where you can see when you read the textbook that Mrs. Eddy uses her synonymous term in a very, very exact way. She would speak about that death is a power that nobody can resist and that is irresistible. She would not say, but the power of truth will offset that. She would not say that. She would say the power of life. Nor would she say the power of mind. Yes. I think to go over those notes which we have done last year, where we were considering all those references. You remember we went through mine and took out all those references from the textbook where ideas of mind were used with other synonymous terms. And then spirit, and then soul, and we covered most of the ground of those combinations which are in the textbook. All right. So we will do some exercise on it so that we get really experts in it. Because when you read, lectures that are given by the Christian Science movement, you just can see that they don't have the faintest idea about the synonymous term. They like now to speak about the synonymous term because they have somehow to counteract our activities, and we are saying you need to know the synonymous term. We always shout out that the synonymous term is necessary. So they feel they have to give lectures and write articles on the seven synonymous terms, and when you read them you see that they don't have the faintest idea about the synonymous term. They would use the synonymous term completely wrongly. I had a very interesting letter the other month or so from a student here in America. And she wrote to me and said that she had gone through class instruction, and naturally that they also had the seven synonymous terms, and the teacher gave the assignment that each student should make a list of ideas for each synonymous term. And then next day or so, they had to read it out in the class. Her assignment was principal. And so she said, I had 25 ideas under principle, and read them out, and she said that the teacher was very happy with it and said, it's wonderful, it's good. And now, after having studied the synonymous terms through the compendiums and knowing the rules about it, she said, out of those 25, only 4 were right. See, only 4 were right. All the rest were not right. But the teacher didn't feel it. They were wrong. Huh? They don't know it. They don't know it because they don't know the scientific rule how to analyze the synonymous term in the textbook. This gives me a chance to go back to syllabus 1 and ask you, are you really sure about those rules which we had in syllabus 1, class 1? We had written out those rules with about, 12 or 13 points. Are you sure about those rules? Have you listened to those 2 cassettes where we went through the text of the textbook, and by discussing our findings we were determining the rules that had to be used? I feel that is a must for every student, that he must somehow have seen from that study of the textbook, the reference of the textbook, with those 2 cassettes on the rules. That is a must. You must be absolutely sure in that. And if you are not yet sure about it, go back to them and think it out again, perhaps with the help of those 2 cassettes where we have taken sentence by sentence in the textbook, and to analyze them and to distill from them our rules. If you have that, the whole movement would be saved. See? they would suddenly find out that they cannot analyze the textbook, that they cannot analyze the seven synonymous terms in the textbook, and if they would only have those few rules on one sheet of paper and would accept them, it would be safe. They would then know what the seven synonymous terms are and could clearly distinguish them, and then we would be off. We would have a real good starting ground from which we could take off. So please make sure, Don't think it's wasting the time to go over that again. Make sure that you know what you know. Yes. Yes?
Excuse me, would you please name those cassettes so that it is...
Those cassettes are on syllabus one. You still have, and you should have, that study syllabus one, that yellow paper. And there we have given somewhere, anyway, in the... an annex, rules for studying the seven synonyms for God. We listed there 13 points, and the cassettes, I think there are two.
There are two, and I have changed the title to Gopad is Confusing, Assignment for Syllabus 1.
Yeah, there are two cassettes. Assignment for syllabus one.
I've listed those cassettes now as assignments.
Yes, yes. Is that clear? Are they given away? No, you have to buy them from you. Good. All right. Yeah. Oh yes. It's under point one on syllabus study one. It's under point one. These rules we put there. These rules have been further defined during an evening session at the 1976 summer schools held at Asilomar, California, and Wilmington, Delaware. Those who have not attended one of these summer schools should familiarize themselves with the method of study by listening to the tape recordings made on that occasion, in bracket two cassettes. Contact tape agent. All right, we come to this B3 exercise. And so, in order to know that you are mastering that question of blending an idea with all the other seven synonymous terms, we just make a few exercises. Let's take with mind the intelligence of mind. That's a very clear example. We now know from Mrs. Eddy's writing that mind is characterized by intelligence, just as it is by knowing and all-knowing and apprehending, comprehending, and all that thing which has to do with the main concept of intelligence. Now, there are possibilities, many possibilities, to blend the idea intelligence with another synonymous term. But then we must know why we do it. Say, if we would use the blending, the intelligence of spirit, when would we be allowed to use that blending? Under which condition would we be allowed, or would we not only be allowed, would we have to use the blending, the intelligence of spirit? Yes?
To counteract material intelligence?
To counteract material intelligence? Mm-hmm. When do you speak about material intelligence? In which practical situation is under discussion?
The flesh. Stupidity.
No. If you take stupidity, it is a counterfeit of intelligence. Huh? That would be really...
The opposite of understanding. The
opposite of understanding. Understanding is not an idea of mind. Huh? Understanding is an idea of what?
Spirit.
Of spirit. Huh? Yeah. But if we use the rendering intelligence of spirit, what would be the subject under consideration? And you said quite rightly, material intelligence, but I wasn't satisfied with it because of just one thing, because it is easy to combine two terms. I would like to see if you understand under it a problem, a theme, a life problem. When?
Well, that intelligence is in the brain.
For instance, the moment we feel that, say, that an intelligence is absolutely dependent on a material condition, like the brain, we would perhaps say that the bigger the brain is, the more intelligence you have. That's another concept that is worldwide. Then if you would discuss that and say, it's really inherent in matter that there is intelligence, and therefore it depends on the amount of matter and the structure of matter, how much intelligence you have. And you put the accent on matter, that matter is the source of intelligence. Then you would offset that by saying, it is the intelligence of spirit, or spirit's intelligence, or spiritual intelligence. Yes. That point, can you see? Because you have to counteract that sense of matter by spirit, and therefore the combination is the intelligence of spirit. When would we be allowed, or would we have to use the combination of the intelligence of soul? It's perhaps a bit an exception. The intelligence of soul. Yes?
Ed would sense that the intelligence could be limited or bounded.
Yes? That intelligence could be limited. Yes? In it, at some that intelligence is always living in something, yes? Then you would use, in order to offset limitation, you would use perhaps soul, and therefore it's the intelligence of soul. What else would you perhaps feel as a practical example? Yes? It never comes and goes, it's unchangeable, yes. You may then use the intelligence of soul. Yes? Well, and even much more so?
If a person is unbalanced, if he's mentally unbalanced.
Yes. Yes, but not under intelligence.
Well, if he wasn't intelligent, it seems like if he was mentally unbalanced, it would be a counteract of intelligence.
If he's mentally unbalanced. All right. You would put that perhaps under mind or soul, but not under intelligence. Because you are not discussing intelligence there. Under unbalanced. Yeah. It's not quite. But, yes?
A sinful intelligence.
A
sinful.
Yeah. Is there something like that, the sinful intelligence? Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a bit far-fetched. Yeah. But wouldn't you... Yes?
Intelligence coming through the material senses.
I think so, you see. That's mostly the practical aspect that one feels, that the physical senses are the channels through which intelligence can reach us, that they are giving us a testimony and give us information, and that only that which the physical senses give us as information is actually intelligent information, and therefore you would have to offset that kind of problem through the intelligence of soul and not of mind. Yeah. So, can we put it again in the right perspective? Always think of a problem in life, of a claim that is worldwide, a really fundamental worldwide claim, not just something that is way off, a worldwide claim, and formulate for yourself what that claim is. Then, second big point is that it is the claim that determines the use of the synonymous term. Yes? Because that claim has to be offset. It is not so that Mrs. Eddy speaks out from the synonymous term. Because if Mrs. Eddy would speak out from the synonymous term all through the textbook, she does it very often, but when she would speak out from the seventh synonymous term, she would always have to remain on the level of science and of divine science. She would never be able to relate it to the human problem and to the human beliefs. Therefore, her textbook is to a great extent written on the level of Christian science, which has to deal with the worldwide beliefs. And so the question of beliefs are offset by the same and synonymous term, and that therefore rule the use or the choosing of the right synonymous term. Yes?